Welcome back into Steel on Steel. John Luffer here with you. And a couple of weeks ago on the program, I mentioned that we were just going to have to get beyond the whole issue of trying to deal with things in this country on the basis of using some kind of charge of being a racist, a homophobe, an Islamophobe, and begin to deal with the real issues, because the issues with which we are fighting are demanding critical thinking and not cliche thinking. And we're doing this from Denver, Colorado, and Jesse Lee Peterson is with me right now. Jesse, you have your own program in Los Angeles, don't you?
I do.
How many stations have you been thrown off so far?
So far, three.
It goes with the territory, let me tell
it
you
does.
That.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It goes with time.
I run a nonprofit organization called BOND, the Brotherhood Organization of a New Destiny, and our purpose is to rebuild the family by rebuilding the man. Been around for 20 years now. We're in our 21st year right now.
All right.
And I just want to, we're fighting to put back God's order of God and Christ, Christ and man over woman, woman over children. Put that family back together, then things will start to change.
Okay. And you, we'll just say this because we're not on television, you're black.
As the ace of spades.
You don't look that black.
Turn the lights out, you see.
I grew up during the civil rights movement in the 60s. I was in high school and then college, and I believed in Martin Luther King's dream.
Yeah.
And I thought, even in the 50s, when Mom told me what segregation was all about, I would think, well, that's stupid. You know, that's not right. That shouldn't be. That was my first reaction. So when the civil rights movement came along, I supported it. I said, we need to do this. It's time this end. And then something happened to the civil rights movement, and it got transformed.
Yeah.
And here we are. What are we now? About 50 years later.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're still talking about race. I thought we were supposed to get rid of this.
Well, what happened was, once Dr. King was assassinated, the so-called civil rights leaders who were left behind, they took a message of unity and love and turned it into hate for their own personal gain. You know, they divided the races rather than bringing them together so that they could gain power and wealth. People like the Congressional Black Caucus and Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, Louis Farrakhan, and NAACP. So that's what happened. They divided the people so that they could become the head of the people in order to gain power and wealth. And they used hatred in order to do that. They lied to black Americans and said that the white man hate them, and so that they could become angry in order to manipulate them. And they told white people that if you say anything about it, you are racist. And so many whites gave into that, and that's why we have what we have today.
Right, but the whites are afraid to speak because they're
afraid of being called racist.
Right, they don't want to be called a racist.
Right, and so as long as they can keep us divided like that, they can conquer.
We were supposed to be unified by now.
Right.
You know, and that's why I think after about 50 years, I said, okay, time's up, time out. You guys have had your shot. It didn't work. Now I get to speak.
That's right. Well, it's not going to change until Americans who believe in God overcome fear. Because when you have fear, then you can be conquered. And until white folks get over the fear of being called racist, and blacks get over the fear of being called Uncle Tom, and some of them are starting to get over that, so that we can wake up other black folks who are sleeping by way of anger, it's just going to stay the way it is or get even worse.
Am I right in saying that this whole process for the black community has been what I call a short-circuiting process?
Right.
For example, the Asian community that has come to the United States came here at about the same time as the Civil Rights Movement, the Vietnam War, remember?
That's right.
They didn't even speak the language in some cases, and yet they set up shop. They had a different family ethic than was present in the black community, and they've done very, very well.
Well, black Americans had the same family ethics before the Civil Rights Movement, too. They only gave it up under Lyndon B. Johnson when he said, we'll take care of you, the government will take care of you, but you can't have a father in the home. And then they...
Wait, did they say that?
Yes. You cannot have a man in the home in order to receive government programs, welfare, things like that. And so black Americans said yes to that. So they took the fathers out, and the government became the daddy of the family, and then the corrupt black leaders became the head. But prior to that, for the most part, blacks took care of themselves. And if they needed help with something, the church would help out, or the people in the community would help, not the government.
But that would be an incentive to not have the male in the home, because you're going to get the money. And then there were extra dollars that would kick in with every child that you would have as well.
That's right. I remember many families who, they would have a man, but when the social worker came around to chat, the man would have to leave the house, and she had to pretend that she didn't have a man, so that she can continue to get the checks and things.
All right, so what has this done now? Here we are, like I said, 50 years later, we've played this game.
It morally has bankrupted most black Americans. blacks are suffering not because of racism, but they're like a moral character. They're not taking care of themselves. Someone else is thinking for them now. The government take care of them. So it just literally demolished the family. And so, and if that father's not there to protect his wife and children spiritually and financially, then there's nothing left but evil to take over.
Right.
And they, you know, the civil rights leaders, so-called civil rights leaders, they want black Americans morally bankrupt because you can't control the moral people. You have to demoralize them in order to control them for your personal gain, and that's what's happening.
I was listening to Mark Thompson. Mark Thompson does a show on Sirius Left. He's black. And one day he had made some comments and some people were calling in. Obviously, white gentleman called in and said, you know, what you said is just very racist.
Yeah.
All right. And he says, no, I can't be racist. He said, blacks can't be racist. You know, this is this line that only the dominant class in a culture. This sounds like such a Marxist definition. You can hear the change agentry in this
right,
whole thing.
Right.
And I'm sitting here listening. I thought, you have got to be kidding me.
Well, see, that's the setup. I have to admit that most blacks are racist toward white folks today. It's just that they've been lied to once again. They've been told that they can't be a racist. And so they don't have to look at themselves to see that they are racist because they believe a lie that they can't be. And white folks are not going to tell them that they're racist, so they continue to become that way. And that's why, once again, we have to tell the truth. It's not white racism that's hurting them. It's black racism that's hurting themselves. And we've dealt with white racism. It's now time to deal with black racism. It's a lie that you have to own something to be a racist. It's the hatred of your fellow man based on color and based on judging them for whatever reason, that brain on hatred. And it has nothing to do with what they've been told. Black people are racist. And we saw that a lot of white people were shocked to see how racist their black friends were toward them when Obama became president. And white people who had black friends would disagree with Obama simply because they disagreed, not because of color. And their friends would get angry. Their black friends would call them racist and get angry at them because they disagree with Obama. So a lot of this black hidden racism is starting to come out and revealed itself now because Obama's there, and white people are shocked by that. Even those Christian blacks are racist.
But you know what? Part of the Tea Party movement moved on. Well, the first Tea Party movement moved on the premise of economics. We can't keep spending indefinitely.
Right.
Okay. And that's where it started from. But I think people, especially in my generation, having grown up all these years, finally just said, we're sick of this. We can't open our mouths. We can't have an intelligent conversation. We can't get to the root of problems.
Yeah.
And what I began to notice is that what you're describing was locking the black community into perpetual poverty. And
yes,
they didn't see that. It's like a self-defeating reflex.
Yeah, that's why we have to tell them the truth so we can wake them up. When you're angry, the people who may, or person who caused you to become angry, also control you. They look like your friend. And so that's why I say that we have to tell the truth, because the truth is not going to make them free. And if you're afraid to tell the truth, they don't have a way to wake up, because they're not getting the truth in their homes, their communities, their schools, their churches. They're just not getting the truth anywhere from the government. So somebody got to tell them the truth so they can start taking a second look at what's really going on.
Okay, before we get to the issue of anger and things in the home, because now what you're saying is it's spreading from the black to the white groups as well, because a lot of white families are suffering from the very same thing.
Well, yeah, they're doing the same thing to the white man that they've done to the black man. You know, they say that the white man is racist, he want to control everything, he hate women, and he hates blacks and all that kind of stuff, so that they can turn his family away from him, and then the government will come in and take care of the women and children, and it's over.
Right.
So that's why I tell white men that they need to realize that they represent Christ in their home, and Christ can't have fear. He doesn't have fear. And so they got to stand up and realize that these folks are children of Satan, and they don't have real power on their side. They only have intimidation, and that they should look at the black community and see what happened. They know that the father was taken away, and that's why the government was able to take over the women and children. So the men in the white community got to stand up and not be afraid, or they'll look around in the next 20 to 40 years or so, and they're going to have the same exact situation.
Yeah. Where have the churches been in this? Now, we're talking about obviously there are black churches and white churches. There have been differences in worship styles, and I understand some of the sociological reasons for that. But where have they stood in the midst of this issue? Are they fostering this?
Yes.
Or are they standing for the truth?
They're no different than Jeremiah Wright Jr., most of them. And they're no different than Jesse Jackson. That's why you don't see them repudiating Jackson or Jeremiah Wright Jr. or Obama because they agree with them. Most black preachers are racist too, and they're passing this down to their congregation by pretending that they're with God, but they're not. Most of these black preachers are racist themselves. That's why you don't really hear an outcry about abortion or out of wedlock birth, because these churches are getting money from the government. You know, they support the black politicians, so the politicians get the money and give it to them under the pretense that it's for a program or something like that.
Right.
But most black preachers are godless people. They've been called by their mama and not by God.
But what you're saying is very unpopular.
Right. And I used to have that same mindset when I was angry, too. I believed that lie. But it wasn't until I started to examine myself and question things that were happening, you know, I thought to myself one day, if racism is holding me back, why is it that it's not holding Jackson back or the people who are telling me all these things? They're doing well. Two parents in their homes. The children are going to the best schools. Why the white man is not holding them back? And that's why I try to get people to look at themselves and question things so they can really see what's happening.
Yeah. Let's do a station break right now. Jesse Lee Peterson's my guest. He is a talk show host himself, as well as having an organization called Bond, uniting the races with truth instead of dividing them with lies. Bondaction.org is the website. Don't forget, our website is steelonsteel.com. This is a pre-recorded interview we did from Denver, Colorado. Let's jump back to the interview right now. One of the stranger things that tipped this off to me was that black kids in school who wanted to get ahead and worked on it were then said to be acting white.
Right.
And that was bad. And I go, wow, talk about a self-destructing mechanism.
Right.
That education is a bad thing because it's a white thing. So,
well, that's the hatred of the white man. Anything that seemed to be good and just and doing right, they hate white people so much they associate that with being white. And then there's another dynamic going on, is that if you notice, there was a fight for school vouchers at one point.
Right.
So that the parents can have a choice as to where they want to send their children. And the so-called black leadership fought against that because they want to keep all the black children in the public school system in order to corrupt them. And so they keep them in these schools, and those kids who will try or would try to do better, they're fought against by these black children who don't want to do better. So it's just they're helping to keep the good kids down as well.
Yeah, the public school system, as far as the black community is concerned, has been a disaster.
Yeah, it's evil. But that's the way they want it, though. The leadership don't want it like any better because they don't want you to wake up. If you wake up, they would go out of business. So they have to keep dumbing you down.
Victimology is what we're talking about.
Right, generation after generation.
Let's talk about the anger issue. Why the anger? Where does it come from?
Well, they're first angry at their failing parents. 70% of kids are born out of wedlock. The mothers are angry about it.
In the black community.
In the black community.
It's lower for Hispanics.
Right.
And for...
Yeah, it is. And the kids have been raised by angry women, angry at their fathers, but taking it out on the children. And the kids have to deal with all this pressure. And so after a while, they become angry at the mothers for doing this and grandmothers. And so as you know, you become like that's what you hate, you know. So they take on the identity of the mothers and grandmothers. They now hate their fathers. And then when they go to school out into the communities, they are told that it's racism. So now they hate the white man. Instead of telling them they need to forgive their parents for failing them, they tell them that it's the white man. And so it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. So how do you deal with the anger? Because you know what? A lot of white boys grow up with what they used to call the father wound. Okay, the dad was absent, the dad was abusive,
right.
Whatever it happens to be. It's the same deal.
Yes.
That cuts a real deep hurt inside of people that lasts for a long time.
When you're angry at your father or you're turned away from your father by for whatever reason, you can spend a lifetime separated from God and you always feel that emptiness. Because when you hate your father, you're never going to know God, whether it's a male or female. And that's why God said, how do you say you love me who you never see, and you hate your father who you see all the time? You don't even know God, but yet you hate him, right? And so when you resent your father, you're never going to have peace. That's why you got to love your father by forgiving him so that you can connect with God and have that perfect peace. And you can go to church until you're black and blue in the face. You can give money. You can claim to be a Christian. But if you resent your earthly father, you would never know God. Never know him. Because the man represents Christ on earth.
What do you do if your dad, your parents are dead, you know, or you can't find them or something like that?
Just realize that just like you can't help yourself to do things that you don't want to do, they can't help themselves either. And you wouldn't want your children to hate you, or you wouldn't want someone to hate you for something you can't help doing. Well, your parents had the same problem. They didn't have you so they can hate you. but they had unresolved issues of anger that were passed on from their parents. And so if you could realize yourself, it would cause you to forgive others. Yeah. But you got to get to know yourself.
But that's the start.
Yeah.
Are we making any progress in this area? The country's going through a crisis right now. It's going to go through a bigger crisis right over the next 48 months. And the potential for social unrest is going to be...
It's great right now.
Really, it's going to be strong by the time we're done.
We are making a little progress. The problem is we can't get enough people to speak up and tell the truth. If we could get more people, especially ones who say that they believe in God, because you can't believe in God and have fear or doubt or worry. You have perfect peace, and perfect peace casts out all that stuff. And so if we can get more people, it doesn't matter the color, to just start speaking up in their environment, wherever they are, just tell the truth but don't resent, then we can change it. But a lot of people are just afraid, all in the name of Jesus, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's where the problem is.
But that's because we've been shouting people down for these 50 years.
Well, it's because they have not reconnected with God.
Okay, you're telling on that side. I'm talking about as far as people telling the truth.
But see, if you're a child of God, you can't be shouted down from telling the truth. And the liberals always speak over you or whomever don't want to hear the truth, but you still would tell the truth. Because greater is He that's in us who believe than those that's in the world. That's why you must be born again, so you can be guided by what is right and not what you think or feel.
Okay. Anything we haven't covered so far? What do you think? Because I know radio is a real short time.
Well, in closing, I just want people to know that it's a spiritual battle between good and evil. It's not a battle between blacks and whites or men against women. It's a right versus wrong. And so we have to deal with this thing in a spiritual manner. Stand up, tell the truth, don't back down, but don't be afraid. We have to unite together as one. We have to vote in politicians who are going to do what we hire them to do. If they don't do it, vote them out. We have to build our families and set good examples for our children so that we can change it.
Yeah. It's the syndrome that I've gotten to now is I will not sit down, I will not shut up.
That's right.
In other words, it's time for people to hear things that you don't want to hear. And that's why, if you've noticed, and I know you're involved with the South Los Angeles Tea Party.
Yeah.
When the Tea Party started, the hysteria on the other side has reached fever pitch now.
That's right. Because they know that the Tea Party movement is the right thing. They see the power that they have. They see what happened in the last election when those folks who didn't do the right thing were thrown out. They see that Obama was stopped somewhat from destroying America completely, and that the Tea Party movement had a lot to do with that. And so just imagine if we come together even more so. The liberals are out of there. They don't have God. They're godless people. They don't have real power, so that's why they're trying to...
But the Tea Party's racist.
That's all that these people have, is to lie about what we're about. And people have given into this idea of racism, so they think it's going to work. But so far, it's not working on the Tea Party movement, and that's what I'm happy about.
Well, I think the Tea Party movement, you know what they did? They discovered that there were other people that were thinking like they were, but because there's this cloak that the mainline media, you know that, that puts over it, they didn't know that.
Well, also they realized that they had voted in a man who hate everything that's good about America. So I think a lot of people were shocked, and they realized that we got to stop playing a game here. This is serious. We're about to lose our country. So we got to come together and do something about this. That's the only good thing that has come out of Obama being in the White House. He's really shocked a lot of Americans back into reality. Whereas had John McCain won, we would be complaining about him but not really taking action. Obama has forced us to take action.
Yeah.
And so that's a good thing.
And the flip side, the racism charge, I thought, well, you know, I'm sorry, but you've elected him president of the United States. He has to take the knocks that any president takes.
That's right.
You can't escape under the this cloak and everything. Now, you're doing a radio show. Are you doing it daily or weekly?
Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific time. We're on the internet and we're on stations around the country as well. If people go to my website, bondaction.org, bondaction.org, they can get the listening on where we are, but they can listen live too. Or go to bondinfo.org, bondinfo.org for more information.
6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific time.
Right, Monday through Friday.
Right, it's 9 a.m. to 12 Eastern time. So
absolutely.
People know that. Well, I wish you success because this is going to be a hard-won battle, but it's critical now.
It's fun, though. When you're connected to good, it's fun fighting evil because it's really not you. It's God working through you. And you just literally have fun doing it because it's not your will. It's God's will be done. And that's why God wanted His children to wake up so He can guide them. So it's really not a bad deal. It's fun.
You're a call-in show. I've got to ask this before we say goodbye. Yeah. What are you getting in the way of callers nowadays?
Man, we get people yelling and calling me names and Uncle Tom and sellout, you know, all kind of, I mean, especially black folks. But then sometimes some blacks call in, they're like, wow, I see what you mean. You're absolutely right. And then white Americans, of course, they call in and they understand, they're glad to hear somebody saying it, the truth, speaking the truth. But I try to get them to start speaking up as well.
Yeah.
Because it's not a color thing, it's a spiritual thing. But it's a very exciting show, not boring at all, and I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, you sound like Ken Hamlin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ken from the Denver days.
Yeah.
I always say now, very dictum, say the truth.
That's
just
right.
Keep saying the truth.
Just speak the truth.
Right.
And it's not up to us to make the truth work. It's up to us to put it out there, and God would do the rest.
All right. Jesse Lee Peterson, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Good to meet you.
Recording done at the Stealing the Mind of America conference in Denver, Colorado. I was going to say Vail because they originally happened every year in Vail, Colorado. Now they're being held at different cities around the country. You can always go to compass.org to find out when the next conference will be and possibly near you. A rash of attacks by armed Muslim extremists on villages in Nigeria's Plateau State over the last month have left more than 100 Christians dead, including the elimination of entire families, according to sources there. In a guerrilla-type hit-and-run attack on the Christian community of Vuangkogot, Muslim attackers at about 8 p.m. on September 9th killed 14 Christians, including a pregnant woman. Survivors of the attack told Compass News that the assailants raided the village with the aid of men in military uniforms from the Nigerian army. Gyang Badung survived the attack, but his wife, four children, mother, grandmother, and a nephew did not. Vu Malam, another survivor of the attack, was with her husband and children when the raiders broke into their house. She escaped death when she found a hiding place in one of the rooms. Her husband, only son, and grandchildren were killed. She said she heard the assailants speaking the Fulani language. The ethnic Fulani are primarily Muslim nomads in Nigeria who militant groups appear to be enlisting to attack Christian communities. A situation which keeps arising in Mexico, about 70 Protestant Christians living in the village of San Rafael, Tlanalapan, Puebla State, until Monday, September 12th, finally faced a frightening ultimatum. They had to leave immediately or be crucified or lynched. What the news agency, this is Compass Direct News, which monitors persecution issues around the world, said traditionalist Catholics in the village near the municipality of San Martin Texmelucan, about 60 miles from Mexico City, reportedly threatened to burn down or otherwise destroy their homes. The Protestants left. The traditionalist Catholics, and the reason we're saying that is because they practice a blend of indigenous, native, and Catholic rituals combined. It's a blend. Reportedly asserted that 20 years ago, an assistant village president had vowed that no temple of any non-Catholic faith would ever be permitted in San Rafael Tlanalapan. On September 7th, the village assistant president, Antonio Garcia Orvalle, reportedly met with the Protestants. The evangelicals promised to leave, although the 200 traditionalist Catholics present sought to beat them and expel them right then. The evangelicals' departure date was set for Monday, September 12th. In a newscast 2 days later on TV Azteca of Puebla, Mexico, area traditionalist Catholic Irma Díaz-Pérez rejoiced, saying, "They will never return because we have drawn up a document wherein they have no permission to come back now or ever." A Christian mother of five was allegedly raped by two Muslim men around the middle of September, and area Islamists have been threatening to harm her family if charges against the suspects are not dropped, according to the woman and her husband and their reports to Compass Direct News. On Thursday, September 15th, the 32-year-old woman said she was returning home to Mustafabad in Punjab province's Khazur district when two Muslims, 23 years old and 27 years old, along with an unidentified accomplice, allegedly abducted her at gunpoint, took her to an abandoned house in the area, and raped her. Muslim criminals in Pakistan, where the population is more than 95% Muslim, according to Operation World, tend to assume they will not be prosecuted if their victims are Christians. Her husband said that he was speechless after the mother of their three boys and two girls told him about the ordeal. He called police who visited the crime scene and took the woman to the hospital for a medical examination that proved she had been gang raped. The family continues to receive threats to withdraw the case against the primary suspect, and policemen have offered the family money to drop the case, he said. An investigating officer, Mohammed Sharif, dismissed the Christians' accusations that police had sought money in exchange for dropping the case,
and he refused to acknowledge that Muslims were threatening the woman's family and needed police protection. Sharif said the investigation would accelerate after the primary suspect is arrested. Christian Newswire reported on Saturday, September 17th, that one of the most prominent house church leaders in China, Zhang Rongliang, was released from prison 9 months before the end of his prison sentence and allowed to return home, according to China Aid. His family members reported that he was in good spirits and that apart from serious diabetes, he is in good health. Zhang's wife and their two sons had been deeply concerned about Zhang's health in prison because of his longstanding diabetic condition, which was so serious that he was transferred to a civilian hospital for nearly 2 months while he awaited trial. He was seen handcuffed to his hospital bed, and there were worries that he might die in prison, which prompted international calls for his release. Family members said that they and Zhang thank all of those in the international community who have tirelessly championed his case since his arrest. This week at the United Nations, we have not only the issue of Palestine making a bid for statehood, regardless of any kind of negotiations going on for Israel, but also in New York, they've been holding the United Nations Durban 3 Assembly. And there's a group that's highly critical of the United Nations and monitors what's going on, trying to expose a lot of what is going on among the world's worst dictators, rapists, and anti-Semites, as they call it. But they have been barred by the United Nations from entering the Durban 3 Assembly and to cover this area. This tells you something about the United Nations. The United Nations only wants people who are favorable to its programs. They don't like criticism in very true socialist fashion. You know, you have to go back to Durban 1, which happened in Durban, South Africa in 2001, which was supposed to be an anti-racist conference, and yet it turned into a hate fest largely for Israel. Jews were singularly denied the right to participate in the proceedings there at the conference because they could not be, quote, objective. Security officials told representatives of Jewish groups that their safety could not be guaranteed. Protesters carried signs stating that if Hitler had finished the job, there would be no state of Israel and no Palestinian suffering. During the conference, a Jewish doctor was beaten by people wearing checkered kafias, the symbol of the Palestinian cause, who said that Jews were the cause of all the problems in the Middle East. One local Jewish leader attributed the attack to the atmosphere at the United Nations. Now, you would think in the light of this awful tradition, we're now at Durban 3 years later. In fact, a number of countries decided to boycott this event for fear that it would provide anti-Semites yet another platform to attack the Jewish state. It is what happened at a follow-up to the 2001 Durban conference at Durban 2, held in 2009. And Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, a man who has called for Israel to be wiped off the map and who routinely imprisons Christians within his country, used the 2009 event as a platform to assail Israel. What is noteworthy is the role that the World Council of Churches, which has long been sympathetic to socialist and Marxist causes, played in turning Durban 1 into a hate fest. The World Council of Churches in 2001 sent a 35-member delegation to the conference, which began on August 26th in that year. At the conference, the attendees from the non-governmental organizations from throughout the world deliberated on a draft document that condemned racism, but made no reference to the oppression of religious or ethnic minorities in Muslim-majority countries in the Middle East. The document, however, singled Israel out as guilty of ethnic cleansing and genocide. There were three paragraphs dealing with the issue of anti-Semitism, the last of which read, quote, "We are concerned with the prevalence of anti-Zionism and attempts to delegitimize the state of Israel through wildly inaccurate charges of genocide, war crimes against humanity, ethnic cleansing, and apartheid as a virulent contemporary form of anti-Semitism, leading to the firebombing of synagogues, armed assaults against Jews, incitements to killing, and the murder of innocent Jews for their support for the existence of the State of Israel. The assertion of the right to self-determination of the Jewish people and the attempts through the State of Israel to preserve their cultural and religious identity." Nevertheless, the World Council of Churches recommended that this paragraph be deleted. And a report on the Durban conference, the original one, was published by B'nai B'rith in Canada, described what happened. "The World Council of Churches, speaking for the Ecumenical Caucus, proposed the deletion from the text on anti-Semitism, the paragraph protesting anti-Zionism. The reason was that this clause contradicted the pro-Palestinian clauses elsewhere in the document. The chair called a vote on this proposed deletion without giving the Jewish caucus, or indeed anyone, an opportunity to speak to the deletion. Several caucuses abstained, but only four, the Jewish, European Caucus, Roma, and Eastern and Central European caucuses, voted against. After this vote, the Jewish Caucus and the Eastern and Central European Caucus walked out. The Asian Descendants Caucus subsequently told the Jewish Caucus that they were so confused by what was going on, they voted in favor, even though they intended to vote against. And so it's inconvenient little facts that the politically correct world would not like to deal with, such as the murder of a French Jew, Ilan Halimi, in Paris in 2005. He was 23 years old. He was kidnapped, tortured for 3 weeks, stabbed and left to die at a train station on the outskirts of Paris by Muslims who had anti-Israel literature in their apartments. His torture took place in the basement of a public housing project. People knew of his suffering, but did not call police. The murder of Pamela Vechter, an employee of the Jewish Federation in Seattle in 2006. Vechter was shot to death at the height of the Hezbollah war by a man describing himself as a Muslim American angry at Israel. The plight of Jews in Malmo, Sweden. Jews are fleeing Malmo in droves as anti-Semitic attacks, perpetrated mostly by Muslim immigrants, have increased substantially. Malmo's mayor stated that these are merely a consequence of Israeli policies in the Middle East. The display of anti-Semitic imagery at anti-Israel rallies in the United States during Israel's fight with Hamas in the Gaza Strip during the winter of 2008 and 2009. Protesters carried signs equating the Star of David with the Nazi swastika, a clear expression of anti-Semitism. At one rally, a woman called for Jews to go back to the oven. The World Council of Churches and other groups seem to be ignoring some of these, what should we call them, hate fests against Jews. You can't fight hate by hating. That's the tenet that the Christian gospel revolves around. You have to do something different. Love your enemies, as Jesus said, and pray for them. And just by way of historical note about our neighbor to the south, Mexico, on September 16th of 1810, I should have mentioned this last week, but I decided to throw it in at the end of this show since I love Mexican history as well as I love U.S. history. Miguel Hidalgo, a Roman Catholic priest at the parish of Our Lady of Sorrows in Dolores Hidalgo, Guanajuato, led the first of several uprisings that would ultimately lead to Mexico's independence from Spain in 1821. So it was a series of uprisings between 1810 and 1821. The 16 de septiembre, that's the 16th of September, is really a momentous day in the annals of Mexican history. It is called the Grito de Dolores, the cry of, well, you would translate it the cry of sorrows, but it means the cry from Dolores, Mexico, that led to the uprising to overthrow Spain. It was pretty much equivalent to the United States Revolution, July 4th, 1776. It's also of no small consequence for states such as Texas, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California, which until the mid-19th century were part of Mexico and before that part of Spain. Unfortunately, the direction that Mexico took, which has been, in my mind, tragic for the people of Mexico because it has never lacked in bright people or resources, was based on the Spanish system that they had inherited there of the Peninsulares, and I could go on and on and on, along with a very heavy caste system based on who your parentage was. Were you born in Spain? Were you a person descended from people born in Spain? Were you a mix of Indio or Black? They had literally names for every single different type of mix. And that and the governmental system led to a whole series of overthrows all the way until the Mexican Revolution in the early 1900s, in which there would be a pronunciamiento, is what it was called, a pronouncement where someone would pronounce that the government was not following the Constitution, and they would set up shop in opposition to it, and there'd be some kind of a struggle and overthrow, a new constitution drawn up, and sooner or later somebody would pronounce against that. And that has been the history of Mexico. The history of the countries who inherited their background from Spain versus those from the northern European countries was radically different. Don't forget to pray for those suffering for their faith around the world. Pray for us for provision and protection. Pray for those in charge of your own particular government. We'll see you next week. We're at steelonsteel.com. I'm John Loeffler. The program is Steel on Steel.